Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to begin the program today by taking a look at how you can make your child's or maybe your grandchild's educational experience a good one. My guest, Heather Shoemaker, author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. She joined us last spring. We had such a wonderful conversation. I thought it'd be great to have her back before school gets underway this fall. And certainly to talk with you, what concerns do you have about your child's return to school? Do you think the system needs to be changed? You can join in the discussion by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And Heather Shoemaker, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Larry.
I have to tell you, I bought several copies of your book after the show and handed them out to my daughter's school's teachers, and they seem to appreciate that very much.
Well, good. It'll be interesting to see how the next school year goes for your family.
Yeah. When you look at the education, the school system in the U.S., what concerns you the most?
Well, I think we're on a drive for quantification and to keep all kids, the idea that children all learn the same way at the same time, which if you work with children as a parent, a grandparent, as a teacher, we know that some kids will suddenly have a burst of development a couple years before or after another child. And that learning is a complex web, and it's not all linear. So we pick up things in so many ways, and our brains synthesize it. But it's in a school, we do try to say everybody has to meet this standard at this time, and it has to all be quantified in certain numbers. So that leads to practices such as, we don't have time to get the whole curriculum in, let's cut recess. Or we need to drill this concept because we have to meet these testing standards, so let's give more homework. It leads to fear, and it leads to that these practices that aren't healthy for the kids.
Can parents do much to help change these kinds of things?
Well, I think that's the point. We all feel rather powerless. We feel, oh my gosh, you know, the teacher says my child has to do the homework, so as a responsible, upstanding member of the community and in the household, need to enforce that. We feel we don't have any power, but it's amazing what the voice of one person, of a little common sense, can do, whether you're on the teacher side or on the administrator side or on the parent side, or in your case, school board and wearing multiple hats. I think one voice can make a powerful ripple effect. Because chances are, if you're feeling uncomfortable with what's going on with your child's learning, other people are sharing those same thoughts, but don't know it. Don't know that they're not all alone.
Yeah. Several people want to visit with you, and I think we'll go to the phones and take a call or two here. Rhonda in De Pere, first, thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. Oh, boy, I'm really excited to read your book. I am a certified teacher in Wisconsin. I also have my master's degree, and I taught mainly kindergarten, and when they had so much testing going on in kinder, like myself, many of us went down to preschool, so I taught 4K. Well, then we were sort of being watched outside and led to feel guilty while the kids were playing on the jungle gym. And pretty soon, Wisconsin has mandatory PALS testing, and we're doing that several times a year. I counted over 569 assessments on preschoolers. And, I was pressured to start guided reading on four-year-olds. And I left at 52 to write a book called Being Schooled. And I just want to quote you, Neil deGrasse Tyson, from my book. I wrote, "Get out of the way," he said. He said, "Let the children learn," meaning adults, get out of the way and let the children learn. And I also wanted to say that for parents with preschoolers and kindergarten, talk to your school and make sure there is scheduled playtime in these children's days. They're 4 and 5 years old, and they are just wiping out the easel and the sand table, and it's really sad. And as a guest teacher, I was in a room with high schoolers, and I said, off the bat, I don't believe in homework or testing, and they asked me if I could run for president. So that's all I have to say.
Oh, Rhonda, thanks a lot. Heather, comments?
Yes, well, I think what she's describing is something that's very familiar to people. The kindergarten, their teachers, they feel the pinch, so they move down to preschool, but then, of course, the pinch follows them. It's getting younger and younger. Homework is also following kids. It's very typical for four-year-olds to be getting homework, and if the teachers aren't assigning it, the parents are demanding it, feeling that their kids aren't getting the best. But it's not just home assignments. Often the preschool classrooms, most of them have a giant calendar on the wall, and they're expected to drill that kind of concept, when actually at those ages, the research is showing that young children don't really grasp these big ideas of time, calendar time, till closer to the age of 7. And it's quite natural for that to develop naturally in the brain, even older than 7. So when we're drilling them daily for 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds, it's really trying to push something the brain's not ready for, but it's ready for so much at that age. And so as she's saying, it's getting harder to protect that playtime.
Again, Rhonda, thanks. I want to give John a chance to join in from Beloit. John, hello to you.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me on the show.
Sure.
My boys are 15 now, but when they were younger and in preschool, my thing was they didn't get enough of the basics. I loved crayon drawing, crayon writing, crayon this, crayon that. They marked on our walls. But the other thing is I noticed me and my wife were reading with our children, and the school didn't instill that the parents do have homework. And it's called reading and writing with our kids at home. It's one of the biggest losses we're having. We're not getting the very most basic things. There's some schools that are talking about going to talk to text for their things. They've already removed cursive. And it's going to be a huge loss to our children.
So, Heather, how do you respond to that?
Well, I think he points out, many families, like John's family, read to their kids. They might not even stop reading once the kids are in high school, but continue to read to their kids, have a reading tradition, before bedtime often, the bedtime story. And there's other families that either don't make time for it or don't have the ability to read well themselves, so those kids aren't getting that. But that's why it's even more important, rather than, say, drilling the ABC in these young years and trying to get them to read early at age 4 and 5. But reading is a complex task for the brain, and it involves many pieces, including context and understanding words. And a lot of the skills a child develops in order to learn to read comes from being read to. So teachers can do that. It's not fooling around or goofing off if a teacher is reading a story aloud to the class or using language in many ways.
John, thanks again for calling. I remember my teacher, Ms. Dahl, and I may have mentioned this before, starting every day of school with a chapter in a book. And it was really a lot of fun. As a kid, I still remember that one of the stories, as a matter of fact. It was really enjoyable. Alden in Green Bay up next. Thanks for calling. Alden, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, now we can hear you. Fine.
All right, sorry about that. I heard the conversation before the news break, and I wanted to say I think it's important to work within the system. I'm 19, so I'm going to college and I'm kind of figuring things out. But I grew up in a family that was sort of very, very, my mom was very proactive about teaching us stuff about nature and the world and whatever else. And I think sometimes what we miss in the education system, and as I go through it myself, is that a lot of times we teach these concepts, but we don't bring them into meaning at all, where it's talking about history, but we don't bring up why it matters. And I remember my mom tells these stories about the late Dr. Cochran, who was her favorite teacher in college, who would, teach them about a concept. And then the next week for lab, they would go out and they would actually see it, instead of having, more talk and, whatever. It's like, well, we learned about this fungus. Now let's go out to the woods and let's go see this fungus. Let's see why it matters, bringing it back to a very real world context where, it's not just a concept that floats, but it's connected to something that we can actually relate to, and then we can bring it into our own interpretation and make something out of it.
Hmm. Interesting points. Thanks, Alden, for calling. Heather, comment.
Well, he touches on the essence of true learning, which is experiential, and it has to have meaning, and the child has to have some sort of experience. For example, a lot of kids' curriculum in kindergarten, first grade now, they have to learn economics, and they're quizzing the kids on vocabulary words such as consumers and producers and gross domestic product and things. These are terms, as Alden just said, are floating concepts. They're not really going to get those. They may be able to answer the quiz questions, but they need to work on a much more basic level. And economics for a five-year-old is trading sandwiches at lunch, you know, the barter system. But making things meaningful is so key. And I think when we're talking about literacy, we often skip the idea that reading can be meaningful and writing can be meaningful to very young kids, even kids who shouldn't be learning to read yet. They can still, let's say a two-year-old, a three-year-old, they can, if they're having a temper tantrum, you can grab a pen and say, let's write down how you're feeling. You are so mad right now, and have them, believe it or not, they will stop crying and help you get the letter right. I'm mad you won't let me have a cookie. You know, I'm so mad at you. That is a meaningful literacy lesson. They're learning that the power of the written word expresses my deepest thoughts and feelings. And that same tangent of making things meaningful, making the writing meaningful and the projects meaningful, goes all the way up through schooling, or it should.
Talking today with Heather Shoemaker, who is the author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. I hope you'll join in with our conversation. What experiences have you had? Have you talked to your kids' teacher about less homework? What was the response? What concerns you about today's educational system? Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Join in. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mehler Show. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer today. I'm Larry Mehler here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 11:45 today, we'll continue our discussion on education when we talk about planning, saving, and paying for college. So I hope you'll stay with us for that. Right now, visiting with Heather Shoemaker, author of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. And that's what we're dealing with her today. You, again, can join us at 800-642-1234. I'd love to hear from you. Heather, you have talked about perhaps skipping kindergarten or reconfiguring it, and that may be useful. How so?
Yes, well, kindergarten, as our first caller mentioned, has really changed over the years, and it's become, people call it the new first grade. I would almost venture to say it's the new second grade these days. The concentration of the curriculum is really, acceleration of the curriculum has really gone fast here. So if you have a five-year-old child or a kindergarten-age child, there may be a better place for that child to be than in the kindergarten classroom. It depends on what program is near you. So if you have a teacher who really understands young children and meets their needs and gives them what they need to be doing during the school day, then by all means, send them to kindergarten. But the point is, not all kindergartens right now are meeting children's needs. And you can find an alternate way to do the kindergarten year. And it doesn't always mean, say, homeschooling and keeping them home yourself. I mean, a lot of people have jobs and can't do that. But you can designate somebody else, even a daycare provider or somebody that you trust, to do the kindergarten year with your child, or you can cobble together a lot of programs. You can keep your child in preschool longer, because generally a preschool will meet a kindergartner's needs better than the typical kindergarten today.
Let's turn to Edie in Janesville. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I'm a teaching artist, and what I mean by that is I don't teach art per se. My art form is drama, and I go into a lot of early childhood classrooms, Head Start programs, four-year-old kindergarten, regular kindergarten, and I work with the teacher to do a lot of literacy-based integration of using drama to teach other subjects. And I've done this throughout a lot of different subjects, but I'm mostly in early childhood. And I've been doing this type of work since 1990. And there's a few things that I just find so appalling in terms of changes I've seen in the classroom. Number one is class sizes are just getting ridiculous. I work primarily in the Rock County and Madison area. And in a lot of schools in the Rock County area, I've been in some four-year-old kindergartens where there's like 24 kids in there. And that's crazy to have 24 four-year-olds in one room. I don't care how many aides you have. It's just nuts. And the other big thing I've seen that is, I think, awful is how kids are just, they just don't use their bodies the way they used to. It's like, you know, as adults, we often become so disconnected to our bodies. We're talking heads. And I'm working with a bunch of kids who aren't connected to their bodies. And I don't know if it's sitting in front of TVs or electronics or what has caused that to happen. And I think people just don't understand how important it is for kids to keep learning through their bodies, you know, all the kinesthetic learning kids, how important that is.
Thank you very much for calling, Edie. Heather, a comment from you.
Yeah, well, I love the comment that the caller brought up, because I think when kids enter school, they're sort of asked to divorce themselves from their bodies. Their bodies are trouble. Their bodies get them into trouble. You know, their bodies are telling them to move, and so they poke their neighbor, and then they get in trouble, and then they're deprived of recess. So they're learning kind of early that the adults are wanting them to sit still and be quiet, and that any kind of physical motion gets them into trouble. Stop wiggling, you know, sit down, stand up, all the different things they're told to do. And a lot of the play that kids naturally would do with their bodies, a big, loud motion is not accepted that much, except at recess. So there's designated times where their bodies are allowed to be free, and yet a young child needs freedom of motion almost the entire day. They need quiet times and nap times and so on, but some kids need to move all day long, and I've lived with one in my house. Some kids have a need for constant action, and that's often denied in these classrooms. They don't have the space. So the childhood preschool that I went to, that a lot of the ideas from these books are based on, had a room that was called the running room. It was a big empty room with tumbling mats and a rope hanging from the top that kids could swing from. Any big motion was allowed in there, chase games, yelling, any kind of physical motion, and some kids spent their entire time either in the running room and or outside, and that was welcomed. But a lot of classrooms today aren't set up for constant access to big spaces where their bodies are welcomed.
Hmm. Hey, Edie, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Margaret in Wausau a chance to join us as well. Margaret, hello. Thank you for calling.
Much. I'm calling while I'm picking up my children from Montessori school.
Okay.
So you're going to hear of get climbing in the car here. I love your show. Thank you for this topic today.
Thank you.
I'm fascinated by it. I am a certified teacher in the state, and I'm also have a master's degree. So my training is very traditional, and I have a now going to be third grader who was in school and great student, well-liked by her teachers, well-liked by her friends, coming home from school miserable and just squashed and unhappy and frustrated. And, you know, so it wasn't like she was having behavior issues. So I started looking into alternative options, and we ended up at a Montessori school. And she is just thrilled. She's flourishing. She's thriving. The other kids in her school are thriving. They love school. It's such a community-driven, you know, school. They do wonderful projects. They have, you know, extra recesses. They read the kids where they're at as far as energy levels. you know, the curriculum, you know, the things that the kids are working on. They're very much in charge of their own time, their own learning. It's just been so neat to see. I had an adjustment to it because it is not a product-driven style of education. You have to very much trust the process. You do not get grades. There's no homework. And you just are kind of following and trusting your child's work plan. So it's just been a really neat thing. On the last day of school, I have a preschooler Montessori and a grade schooler, and they were crying that school was over. So it's just been a really neat experience, and I would highly recommend that philosophy of teaching to anybody whose kids are not very happy with the traditional school. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret. Heather, a comment from you.
Well, I think she hit on a great topic, which is trust of the kids and process. And I don't know if it's harder for the teachers or the parents to let this go, but trusting our kids and that they will become who they are meant to be, and that we don't need to force them and hurry them, and we're not going to see results in a methodical line. It's going to just come. And if you're in the hands of talented teachers and your kids are emotionally, you know, not squashed, as she said, if they're looking forward to each day, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah. Thanks again, Margaret. Jill in Suamico, your turn now. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I heard I'm difficult to hear, so I just wanted to get back to the title of your program, The Renegade and the Powerlessness of a Student and a Parent. I have often found that in special selections of an activity like a show, there is no written documentation of criteria of selection of how come your child didn't meet getting picked. You know what I'm saying is that it's like the teacher's pet. You know, you could have had a straight-A student in, say, music for 8 years, and she didn't get picked to sing in the concert solo when there's 3 nights of it.
Yeah.
That's my concern. And then when you bring it up to a parent, you know, whose daughter also didn't get selected, they don't want to say anything because they fear retribution to get into the play next year. So, yeah. More or less.
Well, so feeling of powerlessness there, Heather, comment?
Yeah, I couldn't hear the caller very clearly, but it seemed to be that if a child's not getting selected for something and feeling powerless, I think any time somebody, adult or child, is having a difficult emotion and a problem, go talk to the other person. Whatever the topic is, say, I'm feeling bad about this, and have a one-on-one conversation, because chances are either there's a misunderstanding or there wasn't an intent to hurt. But it can be, it can take a lot of courage to talk to the person that you're having big feelings with.
Yeah, and I think her point, too, if let's say a kid who's gotten straight A's in music for 8 years doesn't get selected to sing in the choir, you know, big event, no reason is given, there should be some, she was talking about criteria, or at least the ability of the teacher to explain why to the child and to the parents why they weren't selected.
Mm-hmm. I think also sometimes things go on that the parents don't know about, and sometimes in some cases it could be that the parent is more interested in having the child picked for something than the kid is. Maybe the kid told the teacher, I don't want to sing a solo. I mean, you never know the full thing, because sometimes there's a lot of relationship that goes on at school between teachers and kids. And there's a lot of families, not saying in this case, but there are a lot of families who are trying to direct their kid to live out their own dreams, and maybe that's not what the child himself or herself is wanting.
You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. What about respect? Do you think it's important for kids to learn how to respect parents and other authority figures?
Yes, I think it respect is a tricky one, because many of us bring different meanings to the idea of respect. To me, respect is all about meeting someone else's needs, understanding their needs, and helping meet those needs. So sometimes we sort of demand respect in ways such as address me as Mr. or Mrs., and that will be respectful. So we come up with conventions to help foster respect, and those can be great. But if, say, to respect a child is to understand that they need to use their boisterous bodies, to respect a child means providing ample time for them to do it. And vice versa, the child needs to understand that adults have limits and have boundaries, and they need to be able to respect those adult limits. It's not a free-for-all in one direction or the other.
I know you note that it's important for kids to speak up when they don't like something and to be specific in describing it. How can parents help their children with this?
Yeah, this is the essence of conflict mediation and peace skills, which is acknowledging that we're all going to have conflicts, whether it's a four-year-old who has a conflict with another child or with adults or whoever. So when conflicts come up, to be able to speak directly to that other person and say, let's say it's in the sandbox, don't throw sand at me. I don't like it when you throw sand at me. Being very specific instead of just saying no or stop or you're mean or you can't come to my birthday party, but getting specific about don't throw sand at me. So that's the kind of thing. And the same thing works for adults, being specific about what you're concerned about. And this is hard for us at all ages, but if we model it, this is getting at what your question is, how can we help teach this? Modeling it all the time. Be specific about what you like. And if two kids are having a disagreement, help them have the conversation. So say, you said stop. What is it that she's doing that you don't like? And then, well, she scribbled on my picture. Oh, so you were drawing and she scribbled on your picture. Tell her, don't draw on my picture. So help give them words, but also help them be the ones that speak directly to a peer. So they learn they have the power to do that, and they don't have to yell, Mom, teacher, every time they need help.
Hmm. Ben in Green Bay has something for us. Hi, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. First of all, I want to compliment teachers out there. They're doing a very difficult task of raising some people's kids and educating them. I have two kids in school, one in middle school and one in high school. And I remember from when I was in school and looking at my children's teachers now, I think a really helpful educational thing for them would be maybe there should be a requirement that teachers have more or different work experience before they get their first teaching job right out of college. I know how it was when I got my first job, and you haven't experienced a lot of life's difficulties and lessons. And I've seen my kids' teachers up front trying to lecture when just last year they were being lectured by a professor. They haven't polished these skills. They haven't even acquired some of the skills that it takes to command a class of 20 or 25, maybe 17-year-olds who are overpowering them. So I think we need to, and I also think that the good teachers should be paid a lot more. And I remember the really, really good teachers I had when I was a kid. They taught you life's lessons during your work day or during your school day, not just textbook stuff. And the young guy who called in before and talked about teaching kids and then taking them out and showing them what you taught them, that's great. I mean, those are the kind of lessons that form our kids for what they should become someday.
Mm. Ben, thanks a lot for calling. Heather, I know you have some comments there.
Well, I think teaching, like parenting, is one of those things that you do not become instantly. You know, when you adopt your child or have your own biological child, you don't instantly become a super parent. There's a gradual process. And the same for teaching. You can get a teaching certificate, but it does take a while for everything to kind of get figured out. And usually it's a process. So we can't become instantly great parents and instantly great teachers. But over time, if we stay open to new ideas and follow the kids, it will work. One thing that I note is that teachers who have the most confidence and experience tend to trust the kids more in their learning and do take them more to the experiential side. As far as homework giving goes, it is shown that the newest teachers tend to give the most homework, and that over time, teachers realize this is not the most important tool, and they will either diminish the amount they give or get rid of it altogether.
Hmm. Homework, good or bad? Is homework good or bad?
Well, that's a very big one. But what they're finding about homework is that its benefits, so the parts of it can have some good benefits, they come in more at the high school age level. So the good part of homework is highly age-dependent, and that the younger you go, the less relevance it has to young children's lives, and the more time it takes up that they really ought to be learning other foundational skills and experiences.
Sarah in Middleton has a question for us. Sarah, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What can we do for you today?
Yes, well, so I have two school-age children that are 10 and 7, and they have found school somewhat stressful academically because the lack of free play time at school and with daily homework. I was disappointed with how tightly controlled 4K in kindergarten was, treating them like little adults and making them sit still and structure time. And so I was able to homeschool my kids for 6 months this year because we were living abroad in England, and I really enjoyed the freedom of learning. We had a morning schedule, but then gave the children a lot of time to read and play, and we traveled around a lot, absorbing history. So they're returning to traditional school this fall, and I really am already dreading the intensity. And I want to know how to address these concerns with teachers when the curriculum and the schedules aren't really up for debate. I don't see a lot of free playtime in the younger elementary classrooms. So mm-hmm. I wanted to know if you had any suggestions.
Yes, I think that the sort of anxiety you're feeling now before school starts is something a lot of the kids and parents feel is, oh, you know, how am I going to try to loosen up what seems like a very rigid structure? Sometimes just having a conversation with the teacher can open things up either for your family or possibly even the whole class. I just read an letter to families that a second grade teacher wrote in Texas, and this is going viral on the internet this week, who explained her no homework policy and said, this is what you need to do that research has shown is much more effective, early to bed, family dinner, and reading together in the evening. So that's one person speaking up. Now, of course, she's from the teacher side. From the parent side, you can get a copy of It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, which has a lot of the research in it, and use it as a conversation starter and say, here's my concerns, what are your thoughts on this, and just chances are, and I've had this conversation personally with many different teachers, chances are you're going to encounter a caring individual who really wants your child to continue joy of learning and may make accommodations. Most people who speak up as a family, for example, our family bans homework in the elementary years but allows it in middle school and will allow it in high school. So when we explain our whys and wherefores, we're usually met with an acceptance, sometimes a disagreement, but still acceptance that we are in charge of raising our family and finding a way that we can work on this together.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling, Sarah. Appreciate it. Tom was driving to Chicago and called in to say he's concerned that we aren't teaching grammar and sentence structure anymore. Thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know about that because most of what I learned about grammar and sentence structure was done in the older years, middle school and high school, and my emphasis on the preschool, kindergarten, early elementary. So there may be places where it's not emphasized, but from English classes that I've seen for that appropriate age, I have seen that they're still concentrating on it, but it may vary from school to school.
Yeah. Chris in Wisconsin Dell says it's ridiculous that we are cutting out all the creative outlets in schools. Creativity is important to math and science and should be not be thought of as a waste.
Ah, yes. Creativity has so many different arms, and one way it comes out, this creativity, imagination, and problem solving, it comes out in children's plays. For example, dress-up clothes. I hardly see any dress-up clothes in the young years, either first grade, kindergarten, and earlier. That's such an important part of how kids learn, is becoming something. They might hear a story about a firefighter, and then they need to become the firefighter. So having some dress-up clothes available so that they can act out their thoughts, ideas, and the things that they just learned is one way. And as far as problem-solving and creativity go, you know, having good sleep boosts those things. It helps kids' brains become more creative and be able to solve problems more, which are needed in so many different subjects.
We have another caller online here, Tony. Let's see if we can get to Tony here. Tony, are you with us?
Yeah. I'm just curious if there's five or six kids waiting to go down the slide, is it okay for the child to go up the slide?
You're getting right to the title of the book. Yes. Well, I think that the in playgrounds, it's the adults usually who are telling the kids there's only one way to play with the equipment. And it's out of a consideration, as you're stating, about fairness and safety and all sorts of kindness, awareness of others. So if kids are waiting, no matter whether it's up or down, we need to help point out to them, if they don't get it themselves, that, you know, there are other kids waiting to play with this slide, so you need to wait until they're done. Maybe they're all going down and you want to come up. It's a matter of turn-taking and being aware of other people and making sure that the game that you're coming up with is not going to hurt others' rights.
Hmm. Yeah, well said. Thank you. Thanks, Tony, for bringing that up. I appreciate it. Well, here we are getting close to the end. What are your final words of wisdom in the last minute or so to parents about, and maybe teachers as well, about this new school year?
Well, I think that we need to listen to our guts, and if something's bothering us, it's time to speak up. It's time to make a change. And just because everyone's doing it a certain way, just because the school has decided it's this way or all the other families seem to be doing it a certain way, doesn't mean it's what's right for your child. It doesn't mean it's what's right for children in early childhood. So go ahead and listen to the questions that are stirring up inside of you and have the courage to speak and have those conversations with other adults, and you might find some mutual allies.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Heather. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. Really enjoyed talking with you.
All right. Thanks so much, Larry.
Heather Shoemaker is writer and speaker on early childhood topics and an advocate for free unstructured play in homes and schools, and she is the author of a couple of books. The latest is It's Okay to Go Up the Slide, Renegade Rules for Raising Confident and Creative Kids. Her previous book was It's Okay Not to Share. So great to have her with us, and certainly we'll have her back and talk with her again. We're going to continue with education and take a look at college education next. John Hupelo is nationally recognized expert in education loan finance and private credit student loans, and he'll be talking with us about planning, saving, and paying for a college education. That next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.